May 4, 2020 is the Live from Pedro show. happy Monday, everybody. We started off with John Coltrane doing Serenity. Me and my guests were just having some serenity right now. Brother Matt, you know, we're in quarantino mode, so he's at the Love Grotto on Pleasure Point, 3 miles south of here, but I'm not totally man alone in my pad because of the wonders of those engineers in Estonia with their Skype software. I got Talia Zedek with me, all the way from Boston. Welcome aboard, Talia. We heard your song off your new proj, E, something called Sunrise.
Ah, awesome. Hi, Mike. How's it going?
I'm really fucking honored to have you on the show. I've been a fan of In fact, I remember the first time I saw you play, we shared a bill. You were front lady for a live school.
Yeah.
And it was in Florida, I think, what's that Disney town? Oh, Orlando.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah, I think I can't remember the name of the pad. It's before I did fucking Diaries.
I don't remember either, but I definitely remember playing with Firehose. I think we played together four of those months.
That's what I'm talking about. And you had really short hair.
Yeah. Like, I might have.
Like bald, maybe.
I probably just cut it, yeah.
And interesting makeup, the circles around the eyes.
Yeah,
it was righteous. I mean, and so you know
that's not makeup, Mike. That's my that is actually part of my face.
Okay, part of my face too. Mine are kind of bags though.
No, even as a kid, I had like circles under my eyes.
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, some people do. It's the kind of thing, you know, like freckles.
Yeah,
different.
Yeah.
Some people hate freckles. My sister has freckles and she hates them.
Yeah. I don't have freckles, luckily. I've got that olive skin.
Yeah, Mediterranean.
Freckles is kind of, I could see how that would be maybe annoying to have. You can't control them, right?
And usually it's fair skin, right?
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
It does. So the sun, anyway, let's talk about your journey through music. What's your earliest musical recollection, Talia?
Oh, wow. Like playing music, you mean?
No,
or
musical, like, you know, as a child or...
As a child, we'll see. I remember dancing around to Night on Bald Mountain, actually. Which is, I don't even know who wrote that music. It's like a classical piece. And my parents were are really, really into music, both of them, but neither of them really played anything. But both of them, especially my mother,
listeners,
is a huge, like music is like one of the most important things to her. But they listen to a lot of like folk music they were into. And so I kind of listened to that stuff. And then for some reason we had this very dramatic classical music record, Night on Bald Mountain, which it might have been like one of those kind of like Peter and the Wolf type things, classical music for kids. But I remember running around and dancing to it and stuff and being pretty into music at a really early age.
That's great. Was there instruments in the pad?
We got a old like piano, like one of those upright things, and both me and my brother took lessons on it, but
How was your experience? Because we've had several guests on the show, and sometimes it's really good, sometimes it's really lame.
Yeah, it was not really good, because I think we had one of those piano teachers, I can't remember her name
now. That's usually the problem. It's not the instrument, it's the teacher. Right.
They actually would slap your fingers or something. And I remember, like, you know, you had to start out playing these, like, really dumb songs. I remember, like, this song, like, something about the Volga, like a very, you know, like, three-note song. And, you know, I started out, like, reading music, and I got very frustrated and quit. Then I had a chance to learn violin, like, in my school. I grew up in D.C., and
I was going to ask you, in school, were you part of the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
Yeah, and later in high school, I was in the marching band, definitely, clarinet. I'm still playing clarinet to this day.
That's great.
Yeah. I would do anything that would get me out of the house. So I was in like the marching band. I was in the jazz band. My favorite was being in the pit for all the like musical plays, because there was always a lot of hijinks going on, and the stage band theater music was, I was not that great a clarinet player. And actually theater music is incredibly hard to play.
Yeah. I can imagine. Lots of parts.
In sharps and flats and all that kind of stuff. But it was fun, kind of like, you know, I don't know, we were pretty, I was kind of a goof off in high school. So, I mean, we would be smoking pot in the pit and, you know, and getting stoned on the, you know, riding to all the away games. I was pretty into it, pretty into that thing, kind of as more, all the people in the band tended to be kind of the renegades and freaks of the school. So it was, I kind of felt at home there.
Yeah, you learned to write and read?
Yeah, I learned how to, read music pretty young. Like, I had, like, when I was 10, I lived in London for a year. My family lived in London for a year.
Yeah.
And it was a really strange educational system there. But I ended up, my teacher, when I was 10, she was, like, the music teacher for the whole school. And so I was basically in music class, like, all day long, which was completely fine with me. And I learned how to play the recorder and read music. I think I was also in the choir. I mean, I didn't learn hardly anything else, but so I learned to read music on there, and then that's where I kind of discovered the clarinet, because an older student came in to kind of show and tell. You know, she had been in our class, and she was like, "Look, Eleanor plays the clarinet," and I kind of fell in love with the sound of that instrument. And so when I got back to the States and was entering junior high, the junior high school had like band class, and I, you know, did the thing where you kind of, you know, rent the clarinet from the local music store, and I got some lessons, and yeah.
You know, that one of the nicknames in the old days was the licorice stick.
Yeah, I know.
Because they used to be kind of rock star, Artie Shaw, you know.
Oh, definitely. It's such a cool instrument. I love it. Like, and for klezmer music and sort of like some of the Eastern European stuff. I mean, I wish I could play like that, but I still.
It's almost like
a clarinet.
Kind of a punk thing. That there's a lot of beats per minute with that klezmer stuff.
Yeah, I know, so I know.
I'm a big fan. And the clarinet, where it lives, like the oboe, it cuts through.
Yeah.
You know, where it lives sound-wise. Can you remember the first record you bought for yourself?
I think the first record I think I remember stealing records from the library, but not intentionally necessarily, but just kind of like, oh, I really like
forever.
This. And I have to keep, listening to it forever. But I think the first record I ever actually like bought for myself, it might have been The Doors Absolutely Live.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, really long time ago. And maybe John Mayall, too. I was really, when I first started playing guitar, I was really into blues. I had, like, Johnny Winter and John Mayall. I remember I had the jazz blues fusion, and it was cool because they would write the chord charts on the back, and you could just play along with it and stuff. So,
right. What about your first gig that you went to?
First gig I went to, it was either Bruce Springsteen or the Kinks at the Capitol Center in Lansdowne, Maryland, or Lansdowne, Virginia. It was Maryland. Which was, actually that place was made famous. I don't know if you ever saw this movie called Rock and Roll Parking Lot.
I've heard of it.
The Judas Priest gig, and that pretty much sums up my high school experience. If you've seen that movie, that's kind of, I went to high school in Silver Spring, Maryland. But the cool thing was that I got into Patti Smith pretty early. I mean, Patti Smith came out pretty early, like and the Ramones in 76. Yeah. And, I guess because New York and D.C. aren't that far away. Like, the Ramones used to play a lot at the University of Maryland in College Park. And I had a fake ID very young. And I was going to punk clubs, like, really, really young. Like, in the 70s, I was going to the Atlantis, which then became the 930 Club. And then now it's in a different place. I think now the Black Cat is kind of near where that was. So I saw a lot of sort of early DC punk bands like the Slicky Boys and the deceits and the nurses and stuff like that. And because back then the Maryland driver's license didn't have a photo on it, so it was really easy to get someone's like older sibling's license and go down there.
Are you cutting your nails?
No, I'm sorry. I'm fidgeting. I'm clicking a ballpoint pen on and off, but I'll stop.
Okay.
It's annoying, I know.
When you listen back, you'll know what I mean. But I want to play some bands that you were in kind of early, and then we'll talk more about your journey.
All right.
Okay, this one here, what we were talking about before we started the show, Live Skull. Gil. Bub and Gil. Bub and Gil. Bub in India. Bub and Matt. Bub in the wool. Bub in a rug. Endure Bub. Bub in stitches. Glass Bub. Bub in rope. Bub in jail. Bub in tent. Bub in pail. Bub on springs. Bubs. Breaks. Bub in pajamas. Bub's party with Gil and Matt and Bub in stitches. You breaked Bub, Gil's pill, perfume roll. Live from Pedro Show, Live Skull with Sparky. Uzi after that. Your own band, right?
Yeah.
Pale
yeah.
White. Then Come, Submerge. I saw Chris do a streaming thing a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. He's been doing some of that. Yeah. That's
right. Bilge Pump after that from Leeds with Pangea No More. Day Walker from Romania with Watching Henry Rollins Play. I just love the title of that song.
Yeah, that's great.
When does Hank play? You know, the radio? Cue ball. I remember before Black Flag gigs, he'd get a cue ball, just squeeze the motherfucker out of it to get ready. The extract out of Canada was Cygnus, then Captain Beefheart doing a poem up in Trinidad. Schizo Few out of Amarillo with Donkey Punch, and finally Like a Leaf from E. Okay, so lots of music in school, it sounds like, which is great, you know, because I've heard a lot of schools cut their fucking music programs and shit. But what about the stuff where after school in the bedroom or the basement or garage band, did you do stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
Well, you should tell me how you got on guitar.
I got on guitar because my friend who lived up the street, Pat Marin, had a guitar, and she kind of taught me how to play guitar. I would play on her guitar, and her brother, who was like 5 years older, was like a bass player and like a musician and a really, really cool guy, one of the, you know, cool kids in high school. And I think me and Pat were both probably in, I don't know, sixth or seventh grade then, but I don't know. I had tried to be in a rock band with clarinet, actually. Yeah. This is how it started. And I did have a band with my, like, neighborhood friends. Rena Roberts played bass, and I think her sister Tina, her identical twin sister Tina, might have played drums. And then we had this other friend of ours, Jay, and I played clarinet. And I think at some point I realized that clarinet was not a good instrument for a rock band. And I guess I was already into rock at that point, but
do you remember a Cleveland band called Death of Samantha?
Oh yeah, yeah. John Petkovic. Yeah,
John Petkovic played clarinet.
Ah, I did not know that. I never saw Death of Samantha. They'd broken up. I saw his next band.
Cobra Verde.
Yeah, Cobra Verde, yeah. Yeah.
Herzog movie.
I didn't know that he played clarinet, though. I never knew that.
But you're right. It was pretty rare.
Yeah, well, I actually ended up playing clarinet in both Uzi and Live Skull. And now I'm playing it again in a sort of more experimental band I'm in called TK. So I never completely put down the clarinet, but I think I realized that, like, the guitar would be a better instrument for just playing with people, jamming with people, and so I learned to play guitar on, I think, on Pat's guitar. I got
Pat have? Does she have acoustic?
Yeah, it was acoustic. Okay.
When did you get your first electric guitar?
I got my first electric guitar. It was in, I think I was in 10th grade, and this girl, Marla, I can't remember her last name right now, was selling her guitar. It was a Gibson Marauder, and she was selling it and a PV Classic amp. And I saved up money and bought it with money I'd saved up, like babysitting or something like that. And I remember my parents were actually not happy about that. But I was like, it's my money, you know, like, yeah. So you can't say anything. And then, you know, the story that amp was actually a cool guitar and a cool amp, and I played it for years afterwards. I mean, Gibson Marauder was kind of like one of their cheaper.
Yeah, Dezo had one. It had a bolt on neck. It was kind of like a Fender.
Yeah, it wasn't bad at all. And also the PV Classic wasn't bad. And the best thing about the PV Classic is I ended up trading it to Eric Martin from the Neats for his Princeton. And I still, to this day, have the Princeton twin, the Princeton Reverb, and I play it a lot at home. Yeah, so I think I might have gotten the better bargain out of that.
Oh yeah, Princeton Reverbs are great.
I know he had a Princeton, but it wasn't loud enough, and my PV was loud.
But for like recording shit.
Oh, I know. It's been in my music room, bedroom, whatever, for pretty much all my life. That's what I use at home, and you know.
Okay, with Pat, you guys made a band, right?
We didn't make a band. Like we both played acoustic guitar, but we wrote songs together. It was weird, and I don't know why. We started writing together right away. She was a singer. She was more into singing. Yeah, that's right. And she had a really good voice. So, like, I think I would play guitar and she would sing. And then, I mean, that didn't go on for too long. But then once I had the electric guitar, I started looking for bands to be in and stuff like that and people to play with more.
What was the first band you were in?
I was in this band called The Fingers of Shame.
You don't have the Sack of Shame?
And no, I don't.
You ain't allowed to take dumps on tour buses. So if you gotta go, they give you this fucking hefty sack, you know, and you gotta foul it.
No.
Sack of shit.
None of us knew about that.
Well, I don't have a lot of tour bus experience, but a little bit.
It was cool. Like, I answered an ad. I was answering an ad in, like, a free paper. I was probably, like, 15 or 16. Uh-huh. And it was this band that was on Limp Records, like in D.C. There was already Stiff Records was really big in the States, and we had our own little indie label called Limp Records. And I was already kind of going to Yesterday and Today, which is a cool store in Rockville, Maryland. And
a couple of days ago I did an interview with a guy who just made a huge documentary on the 1979, 1980 DC scene, and he talks about that record store.
Oh yeah, yeah, it was huge. I mean, like when they put out a compilation record, which I still have, that was of bands that were on their label, and it was like half Japanese and like Slick Boys and like I think Bad Brains was already around then, but I don't think they were on Limp. But there was this band called the Shirkers that had put out this single called Drunken Disorderly, and which I liked, and I think I had seen them play because I was going to clubs by the time I was 15. So I really started pretty young, and I saw an ad and it's like ex-Shirkers, and it was this guy Steve who was way older than me. I mean, I was really young, and we had this band. It was like I was on guitar, Steve was the singer, this guy Zimmer Voss was also on guitar, and the cool thing about it is we actually recorded it with Don Zantara. Wow. He went on, yeah, and it was like ages ago, and that's how long he's been doing
it.
I remember like
this band, Talia?
What's that?
What's the name of this band?
It was that, right? Like, we never did anything with the recording. I think I remember the recording session being pretty traumatic for me, but it was the name of the band was called The Fingers of Shame.
That's right, The Fingers of Shame.
And Fingers of Shame.
Did you do gigs? What was the first gig like?
No, we never did a gig.
Oh,
we
wow. Never did a gig.
Yeah, I think we broke up. I can't even really remember why, you know. We might have broken up after that recording, and all the other people in the band were a lot older than me. I wasn't a very good guitar player at that time, and I remember, like, going into the studio was kind of a rude awakening for me.
But still, you got to do it. It was an experience. What was the first band you joined that did a gig?
The first band I was in that did a gig was a band called White Women.
Yeah.
And that was, I was already in Boston by then, we did a lot of gigs, actually. We played with the Bush Tetras a lot.
Yeah,
and
but
that was,
tell me about the first one, because I'm always interested in that.
Man, this is terrible, but I don't know if I remember the first gig.
That's okay.
Jeez, it might have been like, I remember the first time I was on stage really clearly, because I remember it was at our high school talent show.
Oh, wow. With
and,
the
what's that?
With the clarinet?
No, it was, it was a cover band. We were doing a couple songs. We were doing Crazy on You by Heart. And I think we were doing, maybe Jumping Jack Flash or,
And you were playing clarinet or guitar?
I was playing guitar then.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was recruited. I was recruited by some, you know, high school band. There were a lot of kids who played music in my high school, and so I got recruited to play rhythm guitar in that. And I remember being terrified of going on stage. But then when I went on stage, like, I actually felt all right. Like, I was terrified beforehand.
Yeah.
And then the minute I actually did it, I was okay. And I remember being so relieved. I was like, oh God, I'm going to have stage fright. I'm going to freak out. I'm going to, like, you know. So, but yeah, it's so weird. I don't remember the first gig I did with white women.
Was White Women all women?
Yes, okay. We were all women. And we were named after this, it was like this.
Because there was a Boston band called The Girls, and they were all dudes.
Yeah, that was about the same time as The Girls. Yeah, I saw The Girls. They were
that record.
Jeffrey, I Dare You.
Great. The Perubu guys put that out, right?
Quite possibly, because I know David Ilks, the singer, went on to do a lot of stuff with David Thomas. He was in The Farmers with them and stuff.
That's a great record, The Girls. Steve Stein turned me on to that.
Yeah, I love Steve.
He's up in the Bay Area now.
Yeah. Now we're Facebook friends, but I used to see Steve play all the time. And Steve is great. Yeah, it was great.
Oh, yeah, he'd be at a lot of Minuteman shows, and that dude was a dancer, man.
Yeah.
One of the best dancers of my life I've seen. He'd cover the whole room. I mean, he'd be all over. Yeah, he's a beautiful guy. You know, in those days, the movement was full of individuals.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, we're at the end of the first hour, May 4th, 2020. Special guest, Taddy Zedek. Hold tight for hour two. May 4th, 2020. It's the second hour of the Lot for Pedro show.
After the accident. One of a housing estate caretaker's first weekly starting points is to inspect the estate's rubbish chutes for blockages. After the weekend, if you enter the bin room at the bottom of the block and your paladin bin is empty, you've probably got a blockage to deal with. Chutes become blocked up easily. Someone will try to stuff in something that is too big, and the next thing you know, it's a garbage gridlock situation. This can be solved by trying to poke the source of the blockage with a long pole or by pouring buckets of water down the chute to try to flush it all out. One must be very careful not to stand at the bottom of an open chute, especially while moving the bins around. If something gets dropped from the 10th floor and cracks you on your head, then expect to have a headache, to say the least. I learned my lesson one day when a plastic bag filled with human shit whistled past my nose and landed all over my feet. It goes without saying that a good pair of high-legged steel-toe cap boots are essential on the job. It's also worth having a look into the bins themselves, as all kinds of things end up in them that could be of interest, from rare antiques and comic books that have been cleared out to unwanted pets such as dogs, cats, rabbits, hamsters, and goldfish, and even the occasional newborn baby. You never know what you're going to find.
sad time in the winter. Good morning comes without warning. Thank you.
everybody will be singing. Yeah, they really come alive when the band starts swinging. The Fat City Jive. Everybody will be falling. Yeah, they really on the go. Sweet mama and nobody will be stalling. All the way to Kokomo. Listen to the guitars playing. Yeah, they're really playing loud. And the white folks will be saying, empty pockets ain't allowed. You know that it started with the darkies on the poor side of the tracks. But the white folks changed and they rearranged and never gonna give it back. Everybody will be singing. Yeah, they're really singing loud. Rock and rolling, and the managers are saying empty pockets just ain't allowed. All right. You know, it started with the darkies on the poor side of the tracks. But the white folks changed and they rearranged and they're never gonna give it back, Jack. Everybody will be singing. Yeah, they really. Come alive when the band starts swinging. To the romping, bopping, Fat City. Ain't it pretty? Cats and kitties. Romping, bopping, dance all night. You can shake the old bottom and start a fight to the Fat City Jive.
Got anything else that cooks like that?
Oh my God. Turn up the heat.
Watt for Pedro show. We start off the second hour with E doing Geldin. After that, John Amplis, Pittsburgh guy with Leave Old Jay Calcutt in South London, so it's a little collab there. Caretaker's Bins. I think in England they call trash cans bins, people. Psyche after that. These were some kids right out of high school in the early 70s. They did one gig and pressed up 50 records. It was over. So sort of like your fingers of shame there, tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
Mike Rugnetta after that with Surface, the alternate instrumentation version. Tom Herman, he was on the show last week, guitar man from Perubu, a big influence on me and D. Boone and Georgie, Tom Herman. And he's got two brand new albums, The Long Way Down. Peter Lochner after that, Fat City Jive, he was important in the old Cleveland scene. And finally, Acid Mantle from E. Okay, so, let's see, talent show, band that only does one session. What came after this? You end up going to New York City. Off-air people, we were talking about what Talia called the Boston loft scene because we have a mutual friend, Steve Stain, a beautiful guy. He's up in the Bay Area now, in the city. Well, I think East Bay. I mean, this guy was an incredible dancer and a great musician and stuff, too. But he started in Boston, so you knew him much before I did, before he came to SoCal.
Yeah. We were actually pretty good friends. I mean, he's older than me, but he was one of the art school people, and he was incredible. It was the first I'd ever seen, like, sort of performance art. He was a great, great, great performer, and we just got along really good, and I think I'd have even played some music with him and stuff, but he was a really sweet guy, and we stayed friends for quite a while after he moved out to LA at first, and when I would come through with Live Skull and stuff, he would always come to the shows and we would hang out and stuff. So
he was big when the Anti Club was around in Hollywood, Helen and stuff around that period. But me and D. Boone ended up putting out some records by him, The Brain Feels No Pain, and you said you had a copy.
Yeah, I do definitely.
And then he made a 7-inch for us called, this was New Alliance Records, called What Makes Donna Twirl.
Oh, God. I don't know.
It's trippy, you know. It's beautiful. It's avant-garde and free and just people like that. That's what I miss about the old days of the movement. Not just to be nostalgic, but there was a lot of inspiring individuals.
Yeah. I mean,
not a lot, because our scene was small, but inside that small scene was a lot. There wasn't a lot of clonage. There wasn't a lot of rubber stamp yet, cookie cutter.
Oh.
You know what I mean? So in Boston there, well, you end up getting to New York, right?
I went to, my time in New York was pretty brief, to tell you the truth. I've mostly been in Boston, but I moved to, when I first joined, I moved to New York because I had joined Live Skull.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, the first sort of 6 months of playing with them, I was actually commuting, and then I think I was still in Boston when we recorded Dust It, but shortly after we recorded Dust It, I moved to New York. Yeah, and I was in New York for like the last half of the 80s.
What was his name? Tom Payne?
Yeah, Tom Payne, yeah.
Right. I remember Thirst told me he wrote a song called Tom Violence.
Oh, wow.
And I think it was.
Is that about Tom Payne?
Yeah, maybe it was.
Oh, wow.
I think it's on Evil.
Yeah, that or Sister. Yeah, no, I know that song. It's a great song.
Yeah, yeah. That was kind of their symphonic, you know, just after. A Boston guy. Big influence on him and Lee Ronaldo. God, we just lost him, too. Glenn Branca.
Oh, yeah.
I got to be in one of his symphonies, Symphony No. 13, here at the Disney Music Center. He's a beautiful guy, and his wife, Reg. And I remember him telling me about Boston. He actually came to your town to get into theater, and then music just happened to happen. But I asked him what was his favorite rock band, and he told me Aerosmith.
Wow. Yeah, I had no idea that Glenn Branca was ever in Boston.
Yeah, he told me he came there to get involved with theater, but you know how things happen. You know, he ended up as a music guy.
A weird connection between Live Skull and Glenn Branca, too, is that Live Skull's second bass player, Sonda, I don't know if she was in the band when we played with you guys or not, but she had long blonde hair.
Yeah,
She's actually Glenn Branca's cousin.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And get this, there was another band kind of in that scene, Rat At Rat R. And when
yeah,
I did
Tonto
the,
was in it.
When
yeah.
I did the Hallucination City Symphony 13, he was the conductor, John Meyer, one of the guitar men.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And great guy. I watched him count out every fucking bar. There was four movements. There was only one drummer, 20 basses, 64 guitars. And I sat next to the drummer man, Virgil, and I watched John the entire... But he... Remember Radar? They were kind of into that Sonic Youth thing, too. So, look, let me play Caught.
We'll be right back. Into the sunrise, beginning to fly. I really love packing up and driving and leaving it all behind, taking off in a rush and flying, traveling oh so far, down distant dynamite highways, past the morning star. Music is the thing and you line it up, coffee for a fling and it is there in your cup. And I'm still driving, driving, jamming and viewing things, going to see a good friend, speeding away the miles till the CD's end and I finally make it. Doing right at the wheel, hold her steady and true, and you are highway jamming, not bad, just flying along, waiting for that highway to end on a song, feeling that driving is alright, another journey done right.
Thank you.
Wife for Pedro show. Caught for me. It's All Happening. From the band called It's All Happening. Sounds like 60s thing. Huh? Living More with Never Slow Down. This is some Nomad Eel stuff. Great label here in Pedro. Joe Brewer, which is Jack Brewer's cousin from Saccharine Trust. Wilmington, man. Highway Jamming. And then Mega Doubt featuring John M. out of Trieste. Well, Jim Joyce taught English. Berlitz School. Va John. Paul Jacobs after that with Easy Warm Weather. And finally, I found this. You with a violin man named David Michael Curry.
Yeah.
Doing a float. Like in some little coffee house or something? Live?
It's just a model cafe. It's actually like this sort of dive bar in our neighborhood, but they let us come in and film that, while the bar was still closed.
I really dug it.
Oh, thanks, man.
Much respect.
Yeah, you met Dave when we played together on, the first tour when I just started doing solo stuff. It was me and Dave, and I don't know if you remember that tour we did. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. But I didn't think that the listeners, so I said his name anyway.
No, good.
So how long were you in life school? Tell you.
What's that?
How long were you in life school?
I was in life, I was not in the original conception of the band, but I joined about halfway through. So they had already done Bring Home the Bait, which was the first LP. They had done Cloud One, which was their second LP, and they had done the Pusherman EP. And I was a huge fan of theirs, and I used to play in Boston a lot, so I would see them a lot. I joined after that, and so I did Dust It, where James Lowe did half that record, and Rich Hutchins did the other half. James Lowe was their first drummer. He later went on to be in Chavez. Great drummer, great dude. And Marnie, the first bass player, was still in that band. So we did Dust It together. And that was kind of more of like a hybrid band. And then I did Posse Traction with them and the Snuffer EP. So I was on the last 50% of their output.
Now, this was the first band when you really start touring and stuff, right?
Yes. I was so excited because with Uzi, I'd been in a few bands before Uzi. I'd been in White Women early on. Then I was in Dangerous Birds. Then I was in Uzi. And Uzi actually, Dangerous Birds, White Women never released anything. Dangerous Birds released a single and had a track on a compilation EP on Propeller Records. And then Uzi actually released a mini album on Homestead and broke up. So I just had a habit of being in bands that broke up as soon as like anything happened. And I'd still never been on tour and I really, really, really wanted to tour. And, it was funny because I went to see Live Skull because I always went to see Live Skull, and one of my friend's bands from Propeller Records, who's actually been in L.A. for a while, this guy Justin Burrell, I don't know if you know him, he had a band called Wild Stairs.
Oh, anyway, I remember that band.
Yeah, they were opening up for Live Skull, and I was hanging out with Wild Stairs in the dressing room, and you know, they were sharing the dressing room with Live Skull, and they heard my name, which is kind of an unusual name, and they were just like, wait, are you in this band Uzi? And it turned out that they had heard the record and were fans of the record, which I didn't know about, but we were on the same label, because I think the first Live Skull stuff came out in Homestead, so I guess it wasn't too weird, but they were like, yeah, so they asked me to, I didn't know it then, but I guess they had been thinking about getting a lead singer, because none of them really enjoyed singing. They were all sharing vocal duties at the time, but I guess none of them really wanted to. And they asked me about Uzi. They said, actually, you know, we just broke up. So that's how that kind of started out. They actually didn't even know that I played guitar. They thought I was just a singer and Uzi. And they thought I was a young boy too. I had a low voice. They're like, wait, you're a girl and you play guitar? But, anyway.
That's okay. Students, they have to learn. We're at the end of the second hour, Talia. May 4, 2020, this is what Peter's special guest, Talia Zedek. Hold tight for hour three. May 4, 2020, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro show.
the back of our lab, we engineered the germs. With this diagnosis, man, I can't confirm. Tracks. The inhibitions fall in, cognition cracks. It's contagious, spreading around. It's contagious, spreading around. Body's decomposing, stuffing up the bones. Ideas infecting, becoming our own. It's contagious, spreading around. It's contagious, spreading around.
You left behind, so grab it. Thank you. There's room to spare on this bench seat, and there's room to keep between the ditches on that street. Don't hit the brakes, no. That'll make me swerve out of my lane. When place I show you no, none of the above if you don't play the game. One eye driving on a back road, I got my mind on my honey and my honey on my mind. And I'm carrying a big load.
Pedro Show, we started the third hour off with E doing Contagion Model. The Veil from up in the city. Original keyboard for Blue Cheer, actually. All You Ever Wanted. Man Alone on the Piano. Crane and Skip, The Late. Atlantis Aquarius, Atlantis. Makes sense. Barrence Whitfield, The Savages. He's from near Boston. Say What You Want. Mr. Smothers. Human Sexual Response. One of the guitar guys that came out of that band is in Barrence's band. I remember those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Wild Stare, the Neats. I remember the DMZ and Scruffy the Cat and quite a scene. Yeah, quite a scene.
The Neats and Wild Stares, they were all on this record. We were all on the same collective record label called Propeller Records.
Right, right.
And yeah, there's some cool stuff on that. The bass player in Barron's Whitfield, Phil, had a really great band called 21645.
Oh, yeah. Chris Burns from Canada after that, Mr. Smothers and Sophie Kate, Bark out of Knoxville, One-Eyed Driving, and finally Miasma from E. So tell me about E.
All right. Well, E is like me and Jason Sanford, who has really, really interesting player and sculptor, actually. He makes all of his own instruments, and he had a band, or he has a band called Neptune. Not sure. They did a fair amount of touring and put out a lot of stuff, and they're still going on, though. They haven't done anything in a little while, but they're based in Boston, and I saw them a bunch of times. I was a fan of theirs, and Gavin McCarthy from Karate is the drummer and singer. He actually is the singer on Contagion Model. Gavin's originally from Baltimore, and you can tell he's got that kind of like Baltimore Ian McKay accent, even though Ian's not from Baltimore, but he's got that sort of mid-Atlantic thing happening.
They call their town Balmore.
Balmore, yeah.
Balmore. Balmore.
Balmore. Exactly. But yeah, so we got together. I was doing, you know, still I've been doing solo stuff for a while now, but I was feeling really the itch to be in a do some collaborating with different people, and I always had kind of in the back of my mind that I was interested in playing with Jason just from seeing his band Neptune play. I can't explain it. It was just this thing I kind of filed away in the back of my mind. I was kind of like, I want to play with that guy one day. And we knew each other, but we weren't friends, and we didn't really hang in the same circle. So it wasn't like I was like running into him or anything. But then that kind of changed and through the person he was seeing and the person I was seeing, we kind of ended up being in this, I ended up at a barbecue over his house, and I knew that a couple of people in Neptune had just left, and I was without a drummer, and I just like, man, maybe this is a good time to ask him. So I just kind of, I didn't really know him all that well, but I was just like, hey, would you be interested in getting together and playing sometime? And he just said yes. So we just kind of started out with me and Jason, cause neither of us were really doing our other stuff, and there was this chemistry there, and we just kind of would just play together for a while, just the two of us, just not even maybe, I guess we were recording stuff, but we weren't even trying to write songs. It was just total like, let's just get together and jam. And then I was looking for a drummer for my solo stuff at the time, and found this great drummer, Alec Tisdale, he didn't really work out for like the TZ band stuff I was doing, but he's a great player, and I was like, and it was also Jason knew him too, and I was like, why don't we ask Alec, you know, see if he wants to come down and join these sort of like just improv jam sessions. And so it started really slow and really organically. Alec ended up leaving eventually, because he had a lot of other interests that were going on, and me and Jason were a little bit more serious about kind of finishing recordings and touring and stuff. And Gavin had, we'd only done a few shows, but Gavin McCarthy had been at all of them, and he heard that Alec left, and then we were trying to think, what should we do, you know? And all of a sudden I was like, maybe Gavin would want to play. So yeah, it just kind of came together. And so Gavin, we put out the first record with Gavin. Once Gavin joined, things started moving a lot faster.
Now, there's no bass.
No, there's no bass. Sorry about that. You know, I actually...
No, I'm just thinking about that poor lonely kick drum.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jason is playing a guitar that he made, so it's not... It's a guitar. We call it a guitar, but it's not really actually a guitar. And he's playing. He's using some bass strings. Oh. It's in a different tuning. It's got six strings, but It's definitely not a normal guitar, and he can do a lot of lower stuff.
You ever hear Charlie Hunter in the City? He plays with a couple bass strings on top.
Kind of a
Nels Klein type of jazz, more fusion than Nels, but yeah, he's got some. And especially since he makes his own stuff.
Yeah, and then he started building. He built this call it a stomp box, but it's actually like a saw blade that's like vibrating on contact mic, and it's in this wooden box, and he can stomp on it, and he can kind of like tune it. So for the first reason we called the band E is because all of our songs were in the key of E, and
okay,
that was one of the reasons. And he kind of liked
because
that.
I was thinking there was a '90s thing with some kind of dance drug, right? Some droga.
Oh,
ecstasy.
Right.
MDA ecstasy. Or some shit.
MDA. Yeah, ecstasy. Yeah. I didn't even think of that. Yeah, everyone used to call it E. That is not what we named the band.
Yeah, good. I want to play Apiaries here.
fast as he can. He's always got a story to tell. To the Medina, we fly with them.
Hey, Randy, how long till we get to the Medina? Get up, man. We don't want to be late. Don't want to miss VOC. City's on the plane. Run that red, man. Run it. Get on it, bro. Hit it. Let's go.
Watch for Pedro Show, last music for this edition. Apiaries, near me, for me. Brendan Eder Ensemble with Lullaby for Adults. He was on the show last week. Yeah, he writes out music for strings and horns and shit. Mold Omen, that's Baltimore band. Detail, D letter, and then T-A-I-L, of course. To anybody from John Waterstown. Although Summers, I think he... Oh, Cape Cod. Yeah, he's... Andrea Vita, Mada, out of Berlin, San Ardo, Riding with Randy. Some dude just gave me this CD at a gig, so maybe SoCal. Blank Tapes, Look in the Light. Finally, Drop Dead. For me. What's the next plan? Well, let's first tell you where they can find you on the internet.
All right, well, he's got a Facebook page. We got a Bandcamp page, which is a band called e.bandcamp.com. We are not able to use simply the name E on either Facebook or Bandcamp because it turned out that I think one of the things Jason liked about calling the band E, also in addition to because all our first record, all the songs were in E, was that it's impossible to Google. So it's impossible to Google us. You can find us if you look for
you get a
band.
Lot of results. Put Talia Zedek in the search bubble, people, because she'll come up. She's got lots of stuff. And I love what you're doing. I can't wait when you get your next thing going or your TZ thing or whatever. Please come back on. But one thing I want to ask, if you meet younger musicians, do they ever ask you for advice? If they do, what do you tell them?
You know, actually, I have not been asked for that much advice.
Okay, Mike's going to ask you.
Okay.
What advice would you have about the music racket?
I mean, I guess there is some advice that when I hear people sometimes, especially in this time, because this is a very, very difficult time for musicians.
Absolutely.
As you know. I mean, like, everyone's tours have been canceled. Everyone's like, will I ever be able to play out again? And
yeah, because I try to use that postpone word.
I'm postponed. Yeah, we're postponed. I mean, I try not to get too depressed about it. We had to postpone a bunch of touring. This whole summer I was supposed to be touring, but it'll come back eventually, for sure. It'll come back eventually. But I think one thing advice I give is that everything comes in cycles, and you just gotta like. You can't let things will be up. It's a rocky ride being a fucking musician, and things will go up. They'll come down. You gotta stick with it through the down times because they're not going to last. And the up times also aren't going to last. So
yeah.
It's just really about perseverance and kind of thinking, you know, being honest with yourself about why you're doing it, kind of managing your expectations and, you know, and not letting yourself get too bummed out. I mean, you know, some people realize, hey, this isn't really what I want to do, and they do other things, and I totally have much respect for people like that too. I'm kind of like I'm a very single-minded kind of person. I don't think it's necessarily a good thing, but I think, you know, if you've been doing music for a long time, some of us, it's just like, this is what we do. We don't really want, and we couldn't really live doing anything else, you know, even though we can make money doing other things. It's like, something that we need to do, and you know, you just gotta—it's wavy, and you gotta ride out the waves.
That's great advice. I can totally relate to it.
Yeah,
it's been a huge honor for me having you on the show. Thank you so much, Talia. Truly,
it's been great, Mike. It's been really fun.
Okay.
Good luck to you. Thank you so much.
Like I said, with the new stuff, bring it on. We'll talk about it, okay? Because you're interesting. Very, your musical journey is very interesting.
All right.
Okay.
Thank
people, May 4, 2020, edition of Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.